Well, it's my pleasure now to introduce our speaker tonight. I was talking with Charlie before the meeting when he got here this afternoon. It's really a pleasure to have him here. I moved to Atlanta about 6 or 7 years ago. I mean, he generally was one of the very first speakers that my new home group, the Mount Vernon group, invited to speak. We have a speaker meeting on Monday nights, and Charlie was kind enough to come in from Savannah, make that long drive that night, and speak with us. And it was, for me, new to the area, an eye-opening experience of the quality of speakers we have here in Area 16 in Georgia. I think you'll all agree with me after you hear Charlie tonight. And it is without further ado, with a great deal of appreciation, that I introduce our speaker, Charlie Wy, from Savannah, Georgia. Charlie.
Hey, everybody. I'm Charlie Yao, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for letting me be here. I've got to come to Atlanta a few times and been to the Naval Club a couple of times, and it's just it's like coming home a lot of times. And anything I do for Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm more than happy to do, and I'm very humbled to, when people do get to, people do ask me if I'll share my story with you. My story is nothing spectacular whatsoever, I don't think. Of course, I lived it. I will get some house cleaning out of the way. 90% of my drunk law is hearsay. I mean, I do have some certified papers from Superior Court judges and divorce attorneys that I didn't know I did all that, but they said I did. So I don't do a whole lot of drunk-a-log. I can't, I don't think I should just take up your time just telling about the dumb stuff that I used to do. You probably done some dumb stuff too. If you hadn't, you hadn't been doing it long enough, and you'll find some dumb stuff, you know. Because alcohol will make you stupid, you know. Of course, my daddy always said, if you're going to be stupid, you got to be tough. So I had to get tough sometimes. But it's an honor to be here, and thank you so much for the spaghetti stuff. It was just, I feel like I need to go to a PTA meeting now and talk about the softball tournament that's going to come up. But everything is great, and everybody's been so nice. There's not a whole lot different for me, except maybe one thing. I'm a Tennessee hillbilly who's been transformed into a jar card toting Georgia redneck. I am single. I put ketchup on scrambled eggs. I put salt on watermelon. I put pepper on cantaloupe. I stand up and put my hand over my heart when they play our national anthem. And I still cry at Danny Thomas and Jerry Lewis telethons. Now, that doesn't separate me from the herd that much. But there is one thing that will separate me. And that one thing is, I can't quit drinking. Now, it doesn't mean I don't want to. It just means I can't quit. So there's going to be some people in here tonight who will not relate to my story, and I've been here long enough to know what I'm supposed to do back here. I know I'm not supposed to force myself on you. I know I'm not supposed to criticize you. I know I'm not supposed to moralize or lecture you. I know I'm not supposed to talk down to you like I'm on some kind of spiritual hilltop. Those clear-cut directions in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that. Now, my sponsor told me how I should speak behind here. Because when I got here, my vocabulary consisted of about 4 four-letter words, and God or mother was in all of them. But my sponsor highly suggested I might want to listen a little while and hear some people who's got a little more vocabulary. Because David said, you do know what cussing is, don't you, Charlie? And I said, well, yeah, I guess. He said, well, cussing is a crutch for conversational cripples. And maybe you just sort of put your crutches away. So I've tried to learn that. I know I was supposed to be dressed presentable, respectful to you, respectful to this podium, respectful to this building, and respectful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm standing here in front of you tonight, sober, in my right mind, and fully clothed. I am the only one that has ever worn this suit. Now, I used not to be able to say that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to have to bar one somewhere to go to court on. And they never matched, but this one does. It's December 3rd, 1993, and I'm crawling around on my hands and knees in a 7-9 jail cell, and I get this revelation. Now, I wasn't sitting around thinking about it. It wasn't the first time I'd ever been in one of those places. Not the first time at all. But it just came to me, and I knew without a shadow of a doubt that, Charlie, you can't quit drinking. That's exactly what's wrong with you, man. You can't quit drinking. Because it may have never happened to anybody here in Atlanta, Georgia, but people started putting conditions on my drinking. I was a union iron worker at that time. I was a structural welder. I'm certified in 12 states. I weld anything but the crack of dawn, broken heart, baby. I know something about welding. And I'd get these great jobs. They'd request me from the union hall. And they'd say, Charlie, you are a gifted craftsman, man. You're meticulous in everything you do. But it's 7 o'clock in the morning, Charlie, and you reek of alcohol. You can't come to work drinking like that. Man, you get hurt on this job, they'll lock us down. You cannot come to work drinking, Charlie. Don't come. Now, I've been doing public work since I was 15 years old. And I can honestly stand here and tell you good people, I have never been fired from a job. But I sure have been laid off while they were hired. I don't know how that works, but it does. The one that kind of gets your attention is, you know, Charlie, you're a friend of mine, a good friend. I consider you a good friend, partner. And we're having a little get-together this weekend. But don't come back to my house drinking anymore, Charlie. Don't come, man. Your jokes aren't funny anymore, Charlie. Your intimidation doesn't intimidate anyone anymore, Charlie. You peed my azalea bush for the last time, dude. I don't even want you playing my dog. Don't come back to my house drinking anymore. And that don't stop you dead in your tracks. Charlie, just don't come home drinking anymore. Okay? You know, I married you. I made my bed. I guess I got to lay in it. But I can't answer that six-year-old boy's questions anymore, Charlie. Mama, how come my daddy don't love me? Mama, how come my daddy won't play with me? Joey's daddy plays with him. How come you and daddy fuss all the time, Mama? How come daddy has to work all the time? I got to go to bed before he gets home, and he's gone before I get up. And why is it, Mama, when he sees me, he says, this weekend, partner, is just you and me. Just you and me. Whatever you want to do, it's just you and me. But it's Saturday, Mama, and he's gone. Or he didn't even come home. Just don't come home drinking anymore, Charlie. Please. Well, I got a little walking around sense. And I said, okay. I see the handwriting on the wall, and I quit. And I quit. About 2 months later, I quit again. About a month after that, I quit for good. About 2 weeks after that, I quit. So help me God, I quit. It's December 3rd, 1993, and I finally realized I can't quit. Now, all that talking is just for one reason. I have stood in front of you good people and took step 1A. That's what I've done, standing right here in front of God and everybody. I have taken step 1A. So I'm not on step 0 anymore. I'm making progress. Now, I'm in this gated community. that has this strict dress code that tells me when to eat, what I will eat, who I'll talk to when I get to talk to, and I ain't got a key to my front door. Step 1B, I believe I can handle that with you. But around the holidays over there in Chatham County, I guess they get ready for the Christmas crowd. I don't know. But at that particular time, I had a jam-up lawyer. My ex-wife-to-be, he was my brother-in-law. And I had a bucket full of money. So he took my bucket, and we got ourselves arraigned, and they cut me loose. Now, I ain't free, but I'm loose. And there's a big difference between being free and being loose, I guarantee you. And I go to my house, and I lock the bedroom door, and I ain't coming out, and ain't nobody else coming in. And I do things that maybe some of us has thought about. It don't make for good telling in mixed company. And I don't even know if you'd even believe it. But I will put it this way. Procter & Gamble has yet to invent a mouthwash or a toothpaste that can get the taste of brown and gun oil out of your mouth. Now, that's been over 17 years ago, and I taste it every time I see it. Every time. But I walk out the next morning, my wife's in the kitchen, stand behind the little counter there. She said, "I didn't expect to see you." I said, "Well, I didn't expect to be here, to tell you the truth. And I know what kind of trouble I'm in. I know I promised you a million times, but I got to go get a drink. I am falling apart. I have got to have a drink." And that didn't seem to bother me. And I'm serious as a heart attack. And she reached underneath the counter, and she put this book up there on the bar. And I looked at it, and I said, "Well, what is that?" She said, "Well, that's a book, Charlie." I know it's a book, but Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never seen that. She said, "Oh, I know that. I've had it a couple of years." I said, "Well, I've never seen that book." She said, "Well, I know that too. I had it in the bill drawer." But I opened the book up, and it's got this little inscription on the jacket of it. And it said, "The words in this book will bring you peace. The words in this book will save his life. When he's ready, I'll be there. May God bless you and keep you to then. David Schaffner, April 1991. Now, I don't know David Schaffner. I don't know Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know a whole lot about God blessing people, to tell you the truth. I just know something's got to be done. And she said, "Charlie, I'm going to ask you one more time, and I'll never ask you again. If you can just hang on for a couple hours, we're going to go see somebody. Please, try to hang on just for a couple hours." Well, somehow I white-knuckle it. We're pulled up in front of this building. We go inside and sit down. In walks this guy, got a clipboard with him, sits down, says, "I'm the assessor." I said, "The assessor?" He said, "Yes, I'm here to assess you." Well, I don't really know what my net worth is. I figure it's kind of like giving a dying man an enema. It can't hurt. We just get right on with the assessing. He said, "Mr. Guy, you come from a broken home?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Tell me about that." "No, I just didn't want to talk about that." He said, "No, just when did your dad leave?" I said, "My dad didn't leave. My mama did." He said, "Well, tell me about it." No, I don't want to talk about that. So he made a little note on his clipboard. He said, "I see that your particular age group, you got a military background?" "Yes, sir." "What branch of service are you in?" "United States Marine Corps." "What years?" 1966, 1972. "Oh. You seen any combat?" "Yes, sir." "Tell me about that." We don't talk about that. He said, no, we're just not. I said, you don't talk about that, mister. No. No. We made another little note. He said, well, tell me about your family life. And I said, well, I guess we got our ups and downs. Bug flew in her mouth or something. Boy, she got the gagging and the coughing. He went and got her a drink of water, and he didn't ask me to talk about that. He's made another little note. He said, Mr. Yow, you drink? I said, yes, sir. How much you drink? Well, I'll drink a six-pack now and then. He said, now that sounds like a lie. I said, it is a lie. It's a bald-faced lie, mister. Mister, I drink all I can drink and all I can hold all the time. It's got to be one condition and one condition only in my drinking. I've got to be at least semi-conscious. Other than that, I drink all I can drink and all I can hold all the time. Well, he compiled his notes and looked at my wife and said, well, I think we'll just keep it. She says, good. She gave me a little peck on the cheek and they just buzzed her right on out the door. They didn't buzz me out the door. And they took you in this room, man. They stripped you everything but your fruit of looms. And they give you this dress to put on. More like an apron. I mean, you tie it in front or tie it in the back, it don't make no difference. You're going to be embarrassed. Then they give you these unifoot slippers. They ain't got no bend in them. You can wear them on your left foot or right foot. Don't make no unifoot slippers, Steve. And I don't know what it is about these places, but man, you hang meat in there. And they said, you all right? I said, well, I'm kind of cold. And they brought out this fishnet looking thing, like what your grandmother would crochet, you know. 12 count shrimp go right through them holes. Now I'm standing here in this dress and these unifoot slippers and this fishnet, and I'm thinking, now that ain't what I had envisioned. And I am a great visionary. I mean, I can have these three-hour, two-sided conversations, and I'm the only one in the truck. I come from a long line of visionaries. Like I said, I'm from Tennessee. My Uncle Buck was a great visionary. Uncle Buck was a logger in Tennessee. He'd get in that Tennessee spring water, and he'd walk to town. And Buck always had this log chain with him. And he'd be dragging this 6-foot piece of log chain down the road with him. People say, Buck, what were you doing dragging that log chain around? Uncle Buck go, you can't push a log chain. It just ain't what I had envisioned, see. They took me in this room and had a little bed and a restroom. And that was about it. I'm standing there in my dress, my unifoot slippers, my fishnet, and the door opens, and in walks Rosie Greer. I mean, this dude's about 6'5", about 350 pounds. He got a straight back chair in this hand and a copy of Sports Illustrated in this hand. He sets that straight back chair down over in the corner, sits down, says, how are you? And I said, okay, I guess. He said, I'm the observer. I said, the observer? He said, yeah, I'm here to observe you. I said, you going to sit there all night? He said, I sure am. He said, aren't you going to get in that bed? I said, I sure am. So all night long, Rosie reads Sports Illustrated, and I observe Rosie. Well, they come by and they feed you in these styrofoam bowls and plastic spoons and pop you one of those silver bullets every now and then so you don't fall apart. About the third day, they send you upstairs for medical examination. And I'm sitting on this cold table, my dress, my unifoot slippers, my fishnet, and walks the doctor. Now, he's an Indian doctor. I ain't talking about Apache or Cherokee. He's an Indian doctor. And there ain't a thing in the world wrong with that. But with his broken English, he's trying to tell me what he's getting ready to do. And with my broken English, I'm trying to understand the procedure. And he washes his hands real good. And he reaches over and gets one of those one-fingered latex gloves and a jar of petroleum jelly and turns around and grins. I said, "Now, Doc, I don't know what's wrong with me, but where are you getting ready to look? It ain't there." He said, "Well, it's part of the procedure." "It ain't part of this procedure." "That dog ain't going to hunt here." He said, "Well, you'll just have to go get observed." I said, "Fine. You go assess me some more, too, if you want to. We ain't doing this." It's all in his head. Clancy talks about the disease of perception. This is what, I mean, that's kind of what was happening, but it was just what was going on. But all of a sudden, in a week or so, I'm out here in this big day room. They got me out here in general population. And I'm walking around my dress, my in-foot slippers, my fishnet, trying to find myself. And they said, "Today, you go to group." And I said, "Group?" They said, "Yeah." "Well, they don't give you a manual when you walk in these places, and I don't know what group is, but I'm in this room. In walks this guy. Don't know who he is. He sits down. He's the council lord." "What do you do?" "Well, a council lord deals in issues." "Man, I'm sitting here in a dress. I ain't got no issues." Going around the room, there's one guy about the third time he's been in there. He keeps failing his drug test at work. He thinks they're just picking on him. And that counselor says, "That's a real issue. We'll deal with that." This other little lady got to get her meds adjusted because the pool man don't show up on time. The clock on that ball bowl won't stay right. Her neighbor's dog poops in her yard and just, oh, she's just a mess. He says, "That's a real issue. We'll deal with that." He got to me, and I still ain't come up with a good one. He said, "Well, just why are you here?" I said, oh, well, I can't quit drinking." And it was just like that. Just a hush come over the room. And I guess he learned it in counselor school. I don't know. But he said, "Oh, no. Now, it is true you have a biochemical genetic disorder affecting the hypothalamic information control center of your brain. It's seen here in Jeff ethyl hydroxide. It forms acetaldehyde, which combines with dopamine, producing tetrahydroisoquinoline, and you lose control." I said, "No, sir, I can't quit drinking." "Well, I ain't even ready for group. I'm back out here in the day room." And over against the wall, they got this little bar, got a sliding glass door on it. And all the guys in the dresses and unifoot slippers and the fishnets are lined up against the wall. Well, I ain't the sharpest pin in the cushion, but I figured that's where I ought to go. And I'm right over there in line. Little nurse opens that sliding glass door up and sits this Easter basket up on the counter. This Easter basket got all these little cupcake holders in them. All these little cupcake holders got all these little jelly beans in them. Now, she only serves one at a time. You stay orderly. She got to me. She looked at my chart. She says, "I see you've been assessed." And I said, "Yes, ma'am." "I see you've been observed." "Yes, ma'am." "I see you refused medical treatment." "Well, ain't no need to go there, I don't think. But I did get doubled up on my observing." She said, "Well, you can have two of these, and one of these." So I took two of them, one of them. Gave me a little shot of orange juice to wash them with. I said, "Well, what do I do now?" She said, "You go back to group." I said, "They just kicked me out of group." She said, "Oh, honey, they won't kick you out now." "I'm back in group." Now, it seemed like an eternity. It couldn't have been that long, but somebody found a thermostat in that place. Son, the temperature started rising. Off come the fishnet. I got this dress hiked up. All of a sudden, I get this second revelation. My daggone feet don't work. And I'm thinking, maybe I got my unifoot slippers on wrong. And I can get down to get them off, and I can't get up. In walks the counselor. "You want issues? I got one now, Bubba." "My daggone feet don't work." He didn't think that was an issue. Well, working when I come in here. About the next 2 weeks, I'm wearing out unifoot slippers left and right because I can't get my heels off the ground. But one day, I'm in front of the little bar, and the little nurse says, "You can't have none of them, none of them, one of them." So I took none of them, one of them. Went to group. Counselor wants to talk about issues. Might have one. Yeah, what's that? You know, if I give me a pint of that wild turkey, I wouldn't need them four pills you just took away from me. Because that's the only thing I've found that's removed the obsessions for me to drink alcohol. The only thing. Now, it makes your feet not work, but it ain't like you're going anywhere. Again, those institutions and the people that work in that field, you are angels of mercy. God bless you, everyone. But it's just like nobody would hear me. I just can't quit drinking. Can't somebody just talk to me about that? But it was like just nobody would hear me. One day I'm in the big doctor's office. He says, "I don't think we can help you. Besides that, your insurance has run out. But we asked you to talk about your mother. Dadgum, you end up talking about our mother. Ask you how you feel. And you say, "With my hands, how do you feel?" Ask you to get that stuff out about that war, and you just clam up. "I just don't think we can help you." And that's a shame. Now I'm getting ready to go to jail, so I don't know why. I just said, "What do you got to have to close out your books? What is it you got to hear, doctor, so you can put a stamp of approval on your treatment? You got to know, what does a 20-month-old boy think? What could I have done to make my mama leave? What can a 20-month-old kid do to make your mama walk out the door and never come home? And every time your daddy would get in that jug, he'd say, 'Charlie boy, don't you ever give your heart to a woman, because they'll just rip it out and they'll leave you flopping like a fish out of water.' You understand?" And I'd say, "Yes, sir, I understand." But I didn't understand, because my mother sent me birthday cards and Christmas cards, and they all said, "Charlie, I'm your mother. I love you. I'll always love you." That's what I wanted to believe. And I'm 15 years old, and I can't get beat no more. And I'm tired of hating. And I'm just like any other animal that you back into a corner. You either fight or you run away. And I couldn't fight him. So one day he goes to work, and I run away. And that 300-mile bus trip, I'm thinking, "Today, Hoss, today I prove you wrong. I'm going to pull up in front of that mansion. I'm going to walk through that manicured grass on those cobblestones. I'm going to step up on that farmer's porch and ring that doorbell. And she's going to come to the door holding a platter of homemade cookies. And everything's going to be all right now. No more beatings. No more hate. Today I prove you wrong." The cab driver says, "This is it, son." And I get out and I walk through that knee-high grass. And I step up on those brick old blocks and I hit that aluminum storm door. It's got the bottom screen about halfway kicked out. And I step back off those brick old blocks and she comes to the door and she's holding something. But it ain't a platter of homemade cookies. And somebody in the back's hollering, "Who is it? Get them out of here." And the first words out of her mouth is, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I want to come live with you, Mother. I don't want to live with him no more. I don't want to get beat no more. I don't want to hate no more. I just want to come live with you." And she steps off those brick old blocks and she says, "Charlie, I love you. I'm your mother. I'll always love you. But you can't stay here. You just can't stay here." And I'm walking off. She says, "Where are you going?" But I don't look back, because the only thing in my mind is that SOB was right. He was right. And I was going to prove him wrong, but he's right. The only reason I tell that is for the Charlies in here who hadn't started this journey yet, just so you can hear a fool talk about how sick he was. That is sick, folks. That I demand that you love me the way I want you to love me. That is sick. But through these steps, through the amends process, I was healed. And that relationship was healed. And 4 years ago, I went and buried my mother. And I knew that I had a mother that loved me, period. And she went to her reward knowing she had a son that loved her, period. No conditions, no restrictions. That's what these steps will do for a fool like me. It heals when nothing else will. You got to hear about that war? You don't want to hear about it. You think you need to hear the decibel sound of a 3-year-old baby screaming because you just shot her mama? Because her mama just handed the guy you shared a toothbrush with about 2 hours before something. And he's hollering, "Find my arms, Charlie. Won't you let them take me out here without my arms? You find my arms." And I'm saying, "I'll find them. I'm going to find them." And somebody else is handing somebody else a basket. And everybody's dying. Even the baby dies. And they send you back to the world. And they stand you on a stage. And they pin a medal on your chest. And they call you a hero. Then you step out of the building. And they spit on you. And they call you a baby killer. You ain't no hero. You're 19 years old. And you've seen enough death the last 10 lifetimes. And you ain't no baby killer either. You just can't find his arms. Is this therapeutic to you? Is this what you had to hear, doctor? Because all you did was sentence me to another year of nightmares. That's all. Just another year of nightmares. Well, I'm wiping the snot out of my nose. And he goes and changes his drawers. He comes back and breaks out this prescription pad and says, "You're going to be supposed... Man, you're a picket fence. And this is the highest dosage I can prescribe, and you need extensive aftercare." And oh yeah, your wife said she wasn't coming after you. Your keys are up front. "God bless you, Charlie." And I said, "God bless you too, doctor. God bless you too." Now the greatest thing that happened to me in that facility is they took me to my first AA meeting. By this time I was in civilian clothes. But I had this big orange armband on and no shoelaces. And they said, "It's voluntary. You can go if you want to. If you go, you can smoke." And I thought, shoot, I'm in. They loaded us up on a little short bus and took us over here in this auditorium and put us way up in the nosebleed section. We sitting there waiting for the smoking lamp to be lit. This preacher gets up there and says a prayer I ain't never even heard before. Somebody gets up there and they read some stuff. Makes absolutely no sense to me. Then they get to fellowshipping a little bit. And I look, and coming up these steps, this long, tall drink of water, he walks right up to me and sticks out his hand and says, "My name's David. How are you?" And I said, "Okay, I guess." He said, "I know you." And I said, "No, I don't think I know you." He said, "That's okay. I've been where you've been." I said, "Oh, you out on bail too?" He said, "No, I ain't out on bail. But we'll talk." Now, I don't know if it was so or not, but to me, he is the only one that night, there's probably 400 people there, that walked up those steps and stuck out his hands to the guys with the big orange armbands on and no shoestrings. And I didn't know why he did it then, but I know why he did it now. So if you come to my home group, which is the Savannah group in Savannah, Georgia, we meet at 1501 Eisenhower, 24-hour club, on Mondays and Thursday nights at 8 o'clock, you're going to see this old boy standing beside a bun coffee maker, and I'm going to stick out my hand, and I'm going to say, "It's really good to see you." And I'll mean it. I promise you, I'll mean it. And I don't know if you got 40 years of sobriety or you just got your big orange armband cut off. And you know what? It better never matter. It better never, ever matter. Well, I leave this place, and it's the last time I really contemplated where I wanted to go. If I turned right and went a block or two, I'd be right in front of the liquor store. If I turned left and went a block or two, I'd be over there where they're having those A&A meetings. Somehow I just turned left. I don't know. And I walked in the door, and there was an old man sitting over in the corner, and he looked right into the bowels of my soul. And he said, "What's your problem?" I said, "I can't quit drinking." And his old face just lit up, man. He thought he won the lottery or something. And you know what he said? He said, "I can't quit either, son. That's why I'm here. Welcome home." Now, I sit in a lot of meetings, and I hear a lot of stories. And they're your stories, and I believe them, and I respect them. But 90% of the stories I hear is the last place I wanted to be was in Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, good Lord, you talking about scraping the bottom of the bucket. Bunch of Jesus freaks and the cup, and I'm just waiting for somebody to bite a chicken's head off. I ain't about to drink that coffee. It's got to have that Kool-Aid in it. I don't even see, I need to know where I can hide my car. I don't see it in the parking lot. Oh, I don't want to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, that's your story. And I respect your story. This is Charlie's story. It took that 5 seconds of elapsed time in history and that one sentence from a total stranger for me to know that I was home. And he took me in this room, we sit down, and somebody got behind the podium to lead everybody in the prayer I didn't know the words to. And they read some stuff that made absolutely no sense whatsoever. And then they circled the wagons, and they got to talking. And guess what they talked about? Drinking. Not so much the physical act of drinking, but the solution you can find when you can't quit drinking. And I never felt more at home. I sat right beside a guy who'd done 18 months on death row for killing a man in a blackout. He's real. He's a good friend of mine. And I never felt more at home. There was a lady sitting beside me who's too pretty to be an alcoholic. And she talked about giving her kids up and turning to prostitution to support her habit. And I never felt more at home. Now, I'm not going to get off on a rant here, but I want to tell you how lucky I am. I'm one of the luckiest people that ever come through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because not the first person, not the first one, insulted my intelligence. It may not happen at the NAVA Club or in the 13G, but it happens in Savannah, Georgia, and it makes me want to puke. That we'll see a Charlie walking in there with the Browning gun oil dripping off his chin, and you know what they'll say to him? "You know, if you don't drink, you won't get drunk." Really? "Yeah, you just don't drink and come to meetings." Really? "Yeah, it don't matter if your hind end falls off. Just throw in a wheelbarrow and bring it right back up here. Just don't you drink." Really? That's your solution? "Hoss, just give me a loaded 45 and a bottle of Jack Daniels and I'll get out of your way. Because you just convinced me that I made the wrong turn. I just made the wrong turn." Because I tell you, the first time I heard it, folks, I was 16 years old and I was looking through a 2-inch piece of plexiglass. And my grandmother was on the other side. And she's saying, "Charlie, if you weren't drinking that stuff and doing that stuff, you wouldn't be in here." And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I know. Charlie, if you weren't drinking that stuff and doing that stuff and running around in yahoos, I wouldn't be spending my retirement trying to keep you out of the penitentiary." And I'm saying, "Yes, ma'am, I know. Trust me, you problem drinkers out there, we know. We alcoholics know. But we can't quit. Self-will's got nothing to do about it. If I could just not drink, I promise you, I would just not drink. And I'd let the cards fall where they would. I promise you, I would. I've been in enough trouble. I've been in enough heartache. If I could just not drink, I would. But before I even started running my mouth good, I told you people, I took step 1A and step 1B. December 3rd, 1993. It is February 26th, 2011. I'm standing behind you people right now and telling you I can take step 1A right now. I can't quit drinking. Without help, I will drink. And all your profound knowledge will not keep me from drinking. It's just the way it is. Maybe there's a Charlie out here. If it is, it's okay to be an Alcoholics Anonymous and not be able to quit drinking. It's okay to be powerless over alcohol. Trust me, it is. But I can move to step two. At the end of that meeting, they asked me if I wanted to join Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, I sure do. And a black lady met me halfway down the hall, the road there. And she handed me a white chip. And I thought they slipped out and made one for me because they knew I was coming. I didn't know you bought them by the pound. But she handed me that white chip and she squeezed the color barrier out of me. Son, she squeezed me like I was somebody. And she squeezed me like she was somebody. And she didn't ask me about my mama. And she didn't ask me about that war. She didn't ask me if I had a valid driver's license or if my insurance was paid up. She squeezed me like I was somebody. And she squeezed me like she was somebody. If you ever get the opportunity to hand out chips in your home group, and you see one of us Charlies walking up the aisle there, don't miss that opportunity. Squeeze them like they're somebody. And squeeze them like you're somebody. It is a life-changing event, or it was for me. Then we held hands and said the Lord's Prayer, and I couldn't remember about half the words. I was walking out the hall, and I said, what do I do now? They said, 5:30, we're going to talk about it again. You be here. 5:30, I come back. We talked about it. I said, what do I do now? He said, 8:30, we're going to talk about it again. You be here. 8:30, I come back. Guess who's sitting up on the front row? That long, tall drink of water came up and shook my hand. Now, I've got 3 AA meetings under my belt. $38,000 worth of therapy because I had such a good therapist. So I swandered on up to the front and I said, David, I need me a temporary sponsor. Son, it looked like I slapped him in the face with a dirty mop. He said, let me tell you something, Hammer. I don't do temporary. Did you come in here for relief or did you come in here for recovery? Now, I didn't know the difference in the words, but I knew the right word to say. And I said, I came in here for recovery. And he handed one of those pamphlets on questions and answers on sponsorship and said, be at my house tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Next night I was there. We went upstairs and he basically told me his story. I think we listened to a tape. But then we got the book of Alcoholics Anonymous out. And I took step 1, step 2, and step 3 that night. And I'm on fire. I am on fire. I said, what you want me to do now, David? Give me the assignment. What you want me to do now? And he put his hand on my shoulder and he gave me the greatest assignment I'll ever have as long as I draw breath on God's great green earth. He said, Charlie boy, start being nice to people. It ain't never too early to start being nice. Now, I didn't know the implications of that. What he was basically saying was, we're going to take these 12 steps to recovery and start allowing these spiritual principles to work in your life. And you're going to be nice to people. You're going to get honest, Charlie. And I ain't talking about lying, cheating, and stealing. That's minor. The depth of deception is being something you're not. And that's how you've lived your life for a long time, ain't it? Being something you're not. And I said, yes, sir. He said, and then you're going to find some hope, Charlie. Because hope is nothing more than what if. See, my biggest fear when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous is, what if this don't work? What am I going to do if this doesn't work? Well, I'm waking up with no whiskey on my breath. And hope gets a track record. And all of a sudden there's faith. I know it works. It's working. What am I doing different? I'm going to these A&A meetings. And I'm praying. I think I'm praying. I'm listening to you pray. So it's working. And you're going to get some courage, Charlie, because you're a scared little boy, aren't you? Yes, sir. I've always been scared. But I can't tell you I'm scared. So I've got to be a tough guy. See, you always spot us tough guys. We're standing on the street corner talking about how tough we are. I mean, heck, I've become a biker, man. I was a biker. So I took these steps. Now I'm a motorcycle enthusiast. But you're going to find some integrity, Charlie. There's going to be some good people you're going to run into in Alcoholics Anonymous. Usually people you wouldn't normally mix with. But their lives have changed. And yours is going to change too. But you're going to have to be willing, partner. All the time you got to be willing. And you got to get humble, Charlie. You got to know where the power is. And it is not in you. And you're going to find that brotherly love. But it's going to take some discipline. A lot of it. And you're going to have to persevere, Charlie. Because sobriety is like taking a bath. It don't stay done. I mean, I get up every morning at 6:30 to take a shower. I'm squeaky clean. I go to work and I come home at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I need nothing. Well, so is my sobriety. Every day, I need to clean it. Our book talks about maintaining that spiritual connection. But you got to be aware, Charlie. Always aware of how good God is. And I'm saying, David, I've broken most of the laws of man. But I've broken all of God's laws. I've broken them all. Why would he help me? And David answered that question. Because he said he would, Charlie boy. Because he said he would. You see, you can't argue with that. If he is the master, if he is the director, if he is the employer, if he is the father, then yeah, I got no reason to argue about that. Then all of a sudden you're going to find that next Charlie. And you're not going to insult his intelligence. Not at all. You're going to say, I can't quit either, partner. That's the reason I'm here. Welcome home. These 12 spiritual principles is what it takes for me to be nice to you. And when I'm nice to you, I reconnect with you. And when I reconnect with you, I reconnect with my God. Alcohol got me disconnected from something I should have never been disconnected from. And Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps of recovery, has got me reconnected. And every night, I'm on my knees and I'm taking that 11th step. I'm saying, have I been kind, polite, and considerate to everybody I met today? Have I even tried? Every once in a while, I can say, yeah, I believe I have. I really believe I have. Then I know I'm connected. That's what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous would do for a Charlie of my type who can't quit drinking. It gives us a spiritual solution and a program of action And none of these things are about catching an airplane or frogs on a log or birds on a wire. Or... Let me tell you something, Hoss. Read that third step prayer. What does it say? You give your most precious possession away. You give yourself to your God. And that's all he's ever wanted, was just his kid back. That's all. I just want my kid back. A lot of things have happened to me in 17 years of recovery, and I've done about everything wrong you can do in Alcoholics Anonymous, except take a drink. I haven't proved him wrong yet. I've been a total failure at relationships. I don't know why. I go into it with all the right ideas. I mean, experience is a great teacher. It lets us recognize our mistakes when we make them again. I go back and tell David, well, I've done it again. He said, yeah, I know. I know. But my sponsor has really only told me two things when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. He told me the first night. He said, Charlie boy, you're going to have to quit fighting alcohol because you're going to lose every time. And you better quit messing around with God because you're way out of your league. I can remember those two things. I can remember the five defects of character that eats my lunch if I'm not God-centered. My selfishness, self-centeredness, my dishonesty, my fears, and my inconsideration will block me from the sunlight of the Spirit. It will disconnect me from you. And then I'm disconnected from God again. And if I'm disconnected from God, the only thing I know to lean on is alcohol or that .357 Magnum pistol. That's all. Thank you so much for letting me be here tonight. God bless Alcoholics Anonymous, and God bless you.